Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson is with us now, live from the White House, where there is, perhaps right now, just a few rooms away, an unlikely staffer poring over the latest polling data from Arkansas or Alaska, or maybe it's Louisiana. Yes, we're 9 months away from the 2014 midterms, but with Congress off this week and back in their home states, incumbents are meeting their constituents in town halls and making their case for re-election. So let's do our first midterm analysis of the year. It definitely won't be the last, but we'll start here. This will be the dominant story through the spring, summer, and fall. And back at WNYC is Mara Liasson. And thank you so much for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
So let's start by just setting the numbers. In the House, Democrats would need to win 17 seats in order to recapture it from the Republicans. That's not expected to happen, right?
No, that's not expected to happen. Usually, in the second term, midterm, the party holding the White House loses seats. And that is, doesn't always happen. Bill Clinton actually picked up a couple, I think two. But they usually lose seats. The average loss in the Senate is 5 seats for the White House party. And Republicans only need a net 6 seats to get the majority there. And that's where all the action is this year in the Senate. Can the Republicans get the net 6 they need to take control? They're very, very confident. They feel the pool that they're fishing in is getting bigger by the day. Many of the states that are – many of the Democratic Senate incumbents are in red states that Romney won, states where – Barack Obama didn't even win the Democratic primary, so they're feeling pretty good.
So you say the historic average for a president losing seats in the Senate is 5 seats. The Republicans need 6 seats in 2014 to take back over the U.S. Senate. Let's talk about those seats and those states that you're watching. There are open seats.
Right. They're open seats. That's the first tier. The first tier is open seats. Those are the easiest seats for Republicans to get because they're in South Dakota, Montana, and West Virginia. Those are red states. Retiring Democrats, open seats. Republicans feel very confident there. The Democrats have done everything they can to give the Democrat in Montana an edge. Max Baucus retired from his seat early. I can't remember if he's the lieutenant governor or not. His name is Walsh. He was put in the seat. He now is the incumbent. That gives him a little bit of edge in raising money, but it's still going to be very tough. Then there's the next tier, endangered red state Senate incumbents like Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Mark Pryor in Arkansas, Kay Hagan in North Carolina, and Begich in Alaska. That's the next tier. Then there are all these states that Republicans are salivating over, like Michigan, Iowa, Colorado, New Hampshire, where they think maybe they can defeat a Democrat, or Michigan is an open seat. Maybe they can win that.
Oh, so even more states that Republicans are watching.
And even more states.
And as far as seeing this through the prism of a referendum on Obama, at a state like North Carolina, it went for Obama in 2008, flipped back in 2012. It has a vulnerable Senate incumbent. What do you just describe North Carolina in this moment, and what it, how much should we look at 08 and 12 as a predictor of what might happen in 2014?
Well, it's very hard to replicate a presidential year electorate in an off year. In other words, what President Obama did by turning out African Americans in North Carolina in huge numbers in 2008 and almost in 2012 is going to be very hard for the Democrats to repeat. Generally, a lot of base Democratic voters, young people, minorities stay home in the midterm elections and they come out in presidential years. Now, in Virginia, in the governor's race we just saw, Democrats did a pretty good job of recreating the Obama electorate for Terry McAuliffe, who won that race. I don't know if they can do that in North Carolina, but that's something to watch. In these other states, Arkansas, very red state. Louisiana is a red state. Alaska also. The popularity of the president will really matter. One thing that we do find historically is that a president's approval rating does tend to be a leading indicator of how his party is going to do in the midterm. And that's why the White House is working so hard to get the president's numbers up into the mid to high 40s instead of the low to mid 40s.
So we've been discussing the Democrats and President Obama as being on the the defensive, but they were able to retain majorities in 2010 and 2012 in many ways by waiting for the Republicans to blow up in primary battles. Talk about Kentucky a bit and Mitch McConnell and the challenge he's facing from the right. Is that a serious challenge?
Well, I think it's a serious challenge, but it's not as serious as the challenge he might face in the general from Alison Lundergan Grimes. There are several Tea Party challenges this year. What we saw in 2010 and 2012, which you're referring to, is the Republicans snatched defeat from the jaws of victory because they nominated the wrong guys. They nominated people who were too far to the right, or they were just not disciplined enough in the general election. Todd Akin, Richard Murdoch. Ken Buck in Colorado. These are Christine O'Donnell in Delaware. These were the wrong nominees for the Republican Party. The Republican establishment is working very hard this year to prevent that from happening again. They don't want to have it happen a third time. Yes, you see people like Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, having a Tea Party challenge and also having a strong Democratic challenger in the general election. However, Kentucky, very red state. Mitch McConnell, very, very wily, good politician. It's hard to imagine Democrats could pick that seat up. But that is where Democrats' hopes lie this year. Maybe Kentucky, maybe Georgia, which is an open seat. And you have Michelle Nunn running there, who's Sam Nunn's daughter, big name in the state. She's a good candidate for the Democrats, but we have to wait and see who the Republican is. Is it going to be one of the Tea Party candidates or a more establishment Republican like Jack Kingston? So until the Republican primaries are over, we really won't know the answer to your question, which is would Republicans kind of, shoot themselves in the foot again?
And let's talk about the issues that are going to define the actual races. And I think about this because when you talk about Democrats running in red states where they hope the Republican might be vulnerable, what are they going to run on? I mean, Obamacare has been the message that the Republicans have embraced for many election cycles in a row here. What's a Democrat going to run on in a state that leans red?
Well, Democrats have to run on local issues. I think that to some degree, the new mobility inequality themes that the president has been pushing can help a bit. Minimum wage is popular across the board, and it is certainly as popular with the Democratic base in these states, although I think these elections are going to be more about independent voters and less about it's not going to be a base election for the Democrats. I think that they can run against their Republican opponents as being out of the mainstream, too extreme. That's what we've seen. That's been the kind of theme in the last couple elections. Republicans run against Obamacare and the president, and Democrats run against the Tea Party. Now, that might work and it might not. And don't forget, each one of these races is individual. Mary Landrieu is someone who knows how to win tough races in Louisiana. This is not a national referendum.
That's right. It always comes down to usually who's the better candidate, even though we like to lay these narratives on top of all these races when we look at it from a national perspective.
But yeah, I think the landscape does matter. The national landscape matters, and it's tilted against Democrats this year.
So about the minimum wage, you just mentioned that. And you said that these elections are going to come down not to organizing base, but to pulling over independents on your side. The Congressional Budget Office's report on the minimum wage and President Obama's proposed increase to the minimum wage, does that weaken the Democrats' positioning of really making this upfront as one of the issues they want to run on in midterms? Talk about the findings of that report.
Well, the CBO report is certainly, ammunition for Republicans who look at it and say, aha, it's going to cost some jobs. And Democrats look at the same report and they say, but look, it's going to raise the incomes of millions of people and make them lift them out of poverty. The minimum wage polls very, very well across the board, even among Republicans. People know that you can't support a family or even just yourself on $7 an hour. So that is, I think, net, it's an issue that's good for Democrats. Doesn't mean that it's the silver bullet. And I don't think you're going to see Republican candidates out there running against raising the minimum wage. They're going to be running against other things. So I think it's still a good thing for Democrats. And every one of these CBO reports can be interpreted in different ways. But the White House is two for two now because they got a CBO report about Obamacare recently that said that it would also decrease some hours of work as people leave the workforce because they're not locked into jobs because of health care.
And let's talk about health care and Obamacare on the campaign trail. I mean, it has been the dominant issue in 2010 and 2012, and now here we are in 2014. Just in a historical perspective, can you remember arguing over a piece of legislation showing up in election cycles again and again and again in the same way as this one recently?
Well, I can't. But I wonder if we had been alive when Social Security and Medicare were started, because those were unpopular in the beginning, too. Obamacare has had a very hardy lifespan as a political issue. But don't forget, this is an issue that Republicans are using. And it didn't work. It worked for them in 2010. Didn't work for them in 2012. This year, because of the disastrous rollout, and because of the fact that it has continued to be unpopular, it hasn't been out there long enough for people to realize that maybe it's not hurting them as much as they think it is. And that might take many, many, many years. So it's still an issue that Republicans are putting an awful lot on. I guess my question is, over time, between now and November, if there are no other huge problems, if Oregon and Maryland can finally get their acts together and get their websites functioning, if there are no more problems with federal exchanges, and if there are no big stories about people losing their jobs or losing hours, maybe it just gets neutralized as an issue. The edge gets taken off and the Democrats can start talking about something else. I don't think it'll ever be a positive this election cycle, but it might be less of a negative than Republicans think. And then they probably need something else to talk about.
And one other thing that doesn't look like it's getting talked about much is immigration reform. The Obama campaign made mobilizing new voters a central part of their strategy by seeding in some ways that immigration reform isn't likely to happen this year. Is that how do you see immigration reform showing up on the campaign trail in 2014?
Well, the conventional wisdom is that it's just not going to be a huge issue in 2014. It's going to be a humongous issue in 2016 because the national electorate has a lot of Hispanics, and the Hispanics are the fastest growing block of voters in the electorate. And 50,000 Hispanic young people become eligible to vote in the United States every single month. They turn 18. And the problem is that the average Republican House district, the way that districts are drawn, has very, very few Hispanic voters. There are maybe a handful where immigration reform advocates hope to mobilize against Republicans. But I think it is dead for the year. I think John Boehner tried. He's one of the Republicans who believe it is important for Republicans to get right on this issue if they're going to have any opportunity to be competitive in national elections again. But he failed. His base just wasn't ready for it now. There's a big debate inside the Republican Party, even among immigration reform advocates, that say, let's wait till after the midterms. We're going to have more senators. We might even have a majority in the Senate. Let's write a bill more to our liking. So the Republican Party still hasn't solved the immigration puzzle for itself. It has to figure out a way to reach out to Hispanics without alienating its conservative base, and it just hasn't figured out how to solve that dilemma.
And likely won't show up much on campaigns in 2014, you're saying?
No, I don't think so.
NPR's national political correspondent, Mara Liasson, thanks so much for joining us and giving us a look ahead
to
the 2014 midterms. I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer.